5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Who looks like a scrotum.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
Do you know the most disappointed I've ever seen my father be in me is when I spent $9.50 on two coffees?
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's going back a few years. Obviously, $9.50 isn't a lot to spend on two coffees now. Yeah. But you remember that? It was, that was probably about 8 years ago.
I thought it was going to crash the car.
Yeah. So basically, Neil, myself, and my dad, we had gone out. We were doing a bit of last minute Christmas shopping, if I remember.
Yeah.
And before, it was my dad driving. And before we got back in the car to go, me and Neil were like, oh, we should grab a coffee. Said to my dad, you want one? He goes, no, I'm grand.
It was so like a Christmas Starbucks special.
Toffee nut, I think it was. Toffee nut latte. So we got the coffees, went back to the car. And we're like, oh, that's lovely. That's nice coffee. That's grand. My dad's like, oh, how much were they? Because of course he has to ask. I went, they're $9.50. And he looked in there, because I was in the back and he was in the front. He looked in the rear view mirror at me and went, $9.50. Like, I mean, I thought his fucking eyes were going to pop out of his head. And you know, the worst thing is, I think I knocked a little bit off the price because I knew he was going to react that way.
Thing is, now it would be $9.50 each.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a coffee the other day from Starbucks. And
just a regular iced latte.
Was it? I thought it was...
It was just a regular latte.
Was it? Latte with a bit of toffee syrup in it.
Yeah, that were about $5.60.
Caramel
quid.
Syrup. It was $5.65.
Oh, you remember.
Yeah, because I guessed $5.60. And someone had bought it for you and you were sending them the cash. And she said, guess how much? And I said, $5.60. She looked at me. She said, $5.65. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, that coffee is outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, I never, it's very rare I buy a coffee out. You know, a lot of money.
But I did think your father were going to crash the car that day. There was another time as well.
He nearly disowned me.
There was another time as well. I thought we were all going to die. I just moved over here and I hadn't got my driving license and stuff, like insurance and stuff, sorted. When I first moved over, I wasn't driving. And her dad, on a Saturday morning, would always go to TK Maxx. And it was like a family day out for him. They did it every Saturday. So I went with him. And you'd got him driving, her mum in the passenger, and then me and Megan was in the back. And he's driving up a two-lane dual carriageway. And he's in the left-hand lane. And he's coming to a roundabout. And he's going straight on. When he got to the roundabout, he drove across it. There was someone in the right-hand lane. And he completely fucking cut them off. Chopped the nose off him. And they was right behind him when he did it.
Mm.
And he looked in his rear-view mirror. And saw the car right up his ass. And went, I'm obviously not going fast enough for them. Mm. And I'm like, you just chopped his fucking nose off.
Yeah.
Like, you literally just drove straight across in front of him.
Mm.
And you have the gall.
The gall, no less.
to be mad at him, being like, oh, I'm obviously not going fast enough for him. Mm. Well, no, you weren't in front of him when he went to overtake you. That were another time where I was like, I just moved over and I was like, what the fuck is happening?
You always give out about Irish drivers, though. You always say they're terrible. Even Irish people will say that the driving is just fucking insane.
Right. I've seen, like, in Spain, and there's so many countries where the driving is just so bad.
Mm.
China, it's supposed to be bad.
India, it's supposed to be really bad.
Yeah.
But, scary, like.
But
it's basically, if there's a space, I'm going for it.
But in Ireland, it's just... like, they put their indicator on and it's a guessing game if they're actually following that or not.
Yeah.
And they get to a roundabout and you can literally see sparks going in the brain that, you know, they don't know what they're doing. Yeah, it's scary.
Mm. I think the worst I've experienced is Italy. Italy is insane. They don't give a fuck at all. They get just do what they want. Yeah, they do what they want. They will... I mean, like I said, India, it's kind of like, I mean, I haven't been, but that's what I've heard. It's kind of like, if there's a space, they're going to go for it. Italy is the same.
Yeah.
If there's a space, they're going for it. Some of the roads they're driving on. Now, I'm from Ireland. I'm used to fucking the back roads and the fucking tight corners and the what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Italy, I mean, similar type of roads, but just they don't stop to think, can I fit? I'm going.
See, and then in
going to make it happen.
In Spain, they don't look at a space and go, that's too tight. They look at it and go, I will make myself
that's
fit.
That's a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen them, they just bump a car out of the way to make room for themselves.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, like Ireland, I think that's kind of what you said. It's a guessing game. But it's not quite as aggressive. It's just stupidity at times.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, Italy, I mean... you're going to shit yourself.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to try and drive in India.
Because
they just make a lane.
Yeah.
They just create their own fucking lane.
Yeah.
I think any country as well that has shitloads of mopeds.
Mm. Again, Italy.
Philippines, Italy.
Yeah.
Thailand.
Lawless.
Yeah. Fuck that. Why? What are we covering today? Something to do with traffic?
Well, no, I didn't bring up traffic. You did. I was talking about coffees and my father's everlasting disappointment in me.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So we're covering your father?
No.
Excuse me. See, I'm flipping it back on you because you keep saying my father's Yorkshire Ripper.
I was about to say, if we're covering anyone's fucking father, it's yours.
So, well, right, everyone, group effort. We'll start calling, you know, we'll start saying Meghan's father's Larry Murphy. Yeah. Oh, you don't like it?
There's no connection. Literally, the only connection you have is he's, you know, from Ireland.
The father is Jerry Adams. Jerry Adams and Larry Murphy had a love child.
Mm-hmm.
It's Meghan.
It's Meghan. Big reveal. No, we're not talking about some traffic road rage incident or whatever you thought it might have been.
Okay.
You should know what we're doing. We're back for part two of Deaths in Boxing.
Okay, yeah. I remember now.
Forgot yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
So first one we're going to talk about is a in the ring scenario. Jimmy Doyle.
I don't know if I know this one.
Well, I'm going to tell you, so don't worry.
But you usually ask me if I fucking know it or not.
Oh, sorry. We'll go through the motions. Are you familiar?
No, I'm not 100%.
Right. So we'll get on with it then. On the 24th of June, 1947, 22-year-old Jimmy Doyle was scheduled to fight Sugar Ray Robinson for the world welterweight title.
Well, I know him.
Sugar Ray Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not personally, but you know of him.
Yeah. There's another Sugar Ray.
You only said it in the last episode. There's a hell of a lot of sugars.
Yeah. Mainly Rays.
Definitely. That's another one I don't get. A lot of Irish people say that.
Your father does. Definitely.
Definitely. It's definitely.
Yeah.
What is that?
Definitely. Definitely. Definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely. So the night before the fight, Sugar Ray had a dream that shook him to his core. Quote, "I woke up in a cold sweat, yelling for Jimmy to get up, get up, get up. My yelling woke me up, I guess. And the sight of Jimmy laying there on the canvas in the dream seemed so real that I had the jitters when I woke up. And I couldn't get back to sleep. I just laid there, tossing in bed. And I felt lousy the next day. And in the back of my mind, I felt scared every time I thought about the coming fight." Now, Sugar Ray was so bothered by his dream that he actually had to be convinced to go ahead with the fight. During the bout, Jimmy was able to hold his own against Sugar Ray, who is said to be one of the greatest boxers of all time, pound for pound.
Mm-hmm.
This was until the eighth round, when a left hook to the jaw caused Jimmy to be knocked onto his back. Jimmy tries to pull himself up. The ref is given the count when the bell rings to signify the end of the round. His team tell the ref to call it, and Jimmy is sent straight to the hospital. Jimmy falls unconscious, and 17 hours later, he dies of a brain hemorrhage.
Okay, now.
Isn't that crazy that he had a dream? Basically, like a, I mean, if you believe in it, like a premonition.
That's what I mean. I think it's...
That's pure coincidence.
Hollywooded.
Well, he's saying this happened, Sugar Ray.
Yeah, Hollywood, innit?
Do you think?
Yeah.
You don't think it's possible that he just happened to have a dream about the fight?
No. You think he saw into the future?
No, absolutely not. I think he had a dream that just happened to be what ended up happening in the fight. I mean, you're having a fight. There's every chance of getting hurt. The only thing that's slightly odd about it is Sugar Ray says, you know, it was a left hook. And it was a left hook.
I think he was famous for his left hook, though.
Well, then it's not even that surprising. So why are you saying absolutely not? It's Hollywood.
It just sounds like one of them things they do to glamorize it. I could be wrong, but it's my opinion.
Well, that takes a little bit of the mystique out of the story, Neil. Thank you for that. At the inquest into Jimmy's death, the coroner asked Sugar Ray if it was apparent that Jimmy was in trouble, to which he replies, quote, "Getting him in trouble is my business as a boxer and a champion."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, we talked about this in the last episode. You know, there is a line, but you're still told in to go there, to fight, to win.
You're not there to look after your opponent. Their trainer is there to look after their boxer.
Yeah.
And the referee is there to look after both of you.
No charges were ever filed against Sugar Ray. The reason, or at least part of the reason, Jimmy had been boxing was to support his mother. After Jimmy's death, Sugar Ray donated the money he earned from subsequent fights to Jimmy's mother in order for her to purchase a home for herself. It was said that over the next 10 years that followed, he also gave Jimmy's mother $50 a month.
That's really nice.
It is. Before entering the ring that night, Jimmy told his father that this would be his last fight, unless he won.
Well, I think he knew he weren't going to win. I think it was a payday fight.
Well, that's what, I mean, he was only 22.
Yeah.
But clearly Jimmy was doing this for a, you know, it was a means to an end, you know? So the next death that occurred within the ring, we're going to be talking about Charles Bud Taylor.
Okay.
Bud Taylor, known as the Terror of Terre Haute, fought in two bouts that caused the deaths of two different fighters.
Fuck.
No good.
No.
On the 11th of January, 1924, at Madison Square Garden, Bud took on Frankie Jerome, also known as the Bronx Spider.
Some of the names boxers have.
I know, I didn't think that was a great one. Bronx Spider?
Yeah, what's that mean?
Also, did you know that there's been multiple Madison Square Gardens?
No.
Yeah, so I was getting a bit confused by dates and some of these, they weren't adding up. Apparently, there was the original garden, which opened in 1879 and closed in 1890. Madison Square Garden II, which operated from 1891 to 1926. The third from 1925 to 1968. And the current one from 1968 to present. I had no fucking clue.
In the same location?
No. Oh. I think there were different locations, yeah.
Okay. No, wild. I didn't know that.
No. So you learn something new every day. But anyway, back to boxing. Bud stopped Frankie in the 12th round. From the fight, Frankie was sent to the hospital to be treated for his injuries. He would pass away 2 days later at the age of 24, following an operation for a cerebral hemorrhage. Bud was cleared of any blame in Frankie's death. This was also said to have been the first death in Madison Square Garden, or at least that, Madison Square Garden.
See, I don't know what your thoughts are, but if you've both signed a contract and a waiver, like I said, your corner men and your referee are there to look out for your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously it's different if one of them falls and the other one stomps them out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, charge them.
Well, yeah.
But if they've stuck to the rules and a tragedy has happened, mm-hmm. I don't think any boxer should ever be arrested for it. Like, it's not an illegal fucking backstreet alley, no rules fight.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, there's situations like with, you know, the Billy Collins Jr., where what happened was clearly illegal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, there's certain grey areas, though, isn't there? Because, I mean, even as a boxer, you know, you do have some level of restraint in you.
Yeah.
You know. Do you get what I'm saying?
No, I get what you mean, but
like the Emil Griffith case.
That's the ref.
No, it is the ref. He absolutely had a responsibility and didn't step in.
Yeah.
But he was so angry because of what had been said and done.
Yeah.
That he just went to fucking town.
Yeah, but sometimes that can, more often than not, that would go against the fighter. If you get a fighter angry,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if you get in that ring angry, I think I've said it before, you get in the ring angry.
You've already
you're
lost.
You're narrow-minded.
Yeah.
Yeah. You haven't got as much chance of winning.
Well, I mean, like, you know, we've discussed before, you quite like the bravado and the, you know, the bollocksology in boxing. I hate that. I can't stand any of that. I think it's very irresponsible, you know?
To an extent, like Muhammad Ali, some of the stuff he said, like you wouldn't be able to say it in this day and age, the stuff he'd say.
Yeah.
I don't know, he'd make nicknames up for his opponent, like when he was fighting Foreman, mm-hmm. he was calling him the mummy, saying he was slow.
Mm-hmm.
So he just always used to call him the mummy.
Yeah.
Joe Frazier will pass that one.
Careful now.
Yeah. That one was racial.
That's nothing to do with us.
No. But yeah, he'd do stuff like that and make up rhymes and poets.
He was a showman. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But now it's your wife's in my DMs and shit like that.
I can't be dealing with it. Yeah. I honestly, Jesus, can't. I tell you what, you were showing me something earlier. You were showing me a video earlier of Chris Eubank Sr. And he had a few things to say about Prince Azeem.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know the backstory there, how true it is or whatever, but he seemed to have receipts.
Okay, so Brendan Ingle, as a trainer,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to get the most out of his fighters. It was all about...
Prince Azeem is also someone we could talk about in this.
Oh. Yeah. You know, stuff like... So Brendan, he trained a heavyweight who was big. I think he was like 6'8".
Mm-hmm.
He was a heavyweight. And he got him to legally change his surname to Towers.
I remember you telling me, yeah.
Because he was towering over you.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So with that, with Prince Nazeem and Chris Eubank, I fully believe Chris Eubank. So basically, Chris Eubank, when he'd come down to the ring, he'd always jump over the ropes. And Prince Nazim jumped over the ropes and in an interview said that Chris Eubank copied him.
But Eubank did it first.
Eubank were fighting.
Yeah.
When Naz was a kid.
Yeah.
And Eubank put a video up of one of his fights from 1990. Naz was like 15.
Mm.
And he's there in the crowd watching him.
Yeah.
In awe. Like,
yeah, yeah. Literally gob open. Like.
And he said in private, Naz said to me, Brendan told me to say it. I fully believe that. I can see Brendan trying to stir something up to get in the headlines. Yeah. But that's... Look, UFC, boxing, all of them, they all do it. All do that sort of shit.
Yeah, but like, I mean, a little bit of goss there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was watching, like, because you were watching the video and I was kind of like over your shoulder, like, what's this? But that's, I mean, like, I'm not saying like stir up drama between people or anything like that. At the end of the day, they're about to, well, not those two are specifically about to fight each other, but people are about to fight each other. Let's be respectful.
Yeah.
But like you said, this whole kind of like, you know, social media age of shit. It's just like, shut the fuck up.
Your wife's in my DMs.
Yeah. No good. So back to Bud.
Mm.
On the 19th of April, 1926, Bud was set to fight Inocencio Moraes at the Milwaukee Auditorium. Known as Cencio, he was just 18 years of age, although the minimum age for a pro boxer at the time was 21.
Yeah, in America, their age thing is weird. You can drive from 16.
Yeah,
you
I don't understand.
Drink from until you're 21.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. I don't. What age do you have to be to own a gun? 18?
Younger.
What?
So, as far as I know, obviously because I'm not American, but as far as I know, I think from like 15, 16, you can have like a rifle.
Jesus.
Like, you can't have pistols and shotguns and shit, but I'm
for
fairly...
For hunting or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, a long-range rifle? Really?
Mm. Again, it's a different world to us.
And then as far as I know, it's from 18.
Just generally owning a firearm.
As far as I know.
The crack.
I'm sure the Americans will let us know.
So yeah, Cencio was just 18 years of age, so...
Babby.
A babby. The bout would later be described as, quote, one of the fastest and most thrilling fights in the local ring's history. Fast and torrid, Cencio held Taylor on even terms. But Cencio had taken a pretty severe beating during the fight and would later complain of a bad headache. They wrapped his head in a cold compress and left him to sleep. The following morning at about 9 a.m, Cencio was found laid in his bed in a pool of blood which had trailed from his mouth. His cause of death was determined to be from a cerebral hemorrhage. His trainer said of him that he had, quote, the most lovable nature of any fighter I ever knew.
18.
18 years of age.
Fucking hell.
And he was away from home.
Yeah.
Cencio was originally from the Philippines, so 18 coming over here just trying to fucking make a name for himself. At his funeral, the priest said, quote, he died a stranger in a strange land. In our hearts, we think of those in a faraway land who will mourn for him. Only Monday night, we saw him fight and put all that he had into that fight that he might have won. Neither he nor you could realize that today his body will be resting in this casket, which cannot but impress upon us the shortness of this life. Cencio's remains were transported back to Manila for burial. As for Bud Taylor, he went on to become the world bantamweight champion. But the death of Frankie Inocencio, of course, had an effect on him. It was said that from then on, Bud would smile while taking shots. It was suggested that he took the beatings almost as a punishment, as a, quote, subconscious need to answer for the deaths of his previous opponents.
His way of self-harming.
I mean, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, fuck.
So the next case we're going to be talking about is out of the ring. And this is the one that is a bit more true crime centered. We're going to be talking about Arturo Gatti.
It's a fucking interesting one.
It is.
Gatti.
you actually mentioned to me about covering this one. You only said the other day, oh, this is something you could cover. And I said, actually, the next episode I'm doing is, you know, surrounding boxing. Do you want to briefly talk about what you know of the case? Because I know you said you don't know in depth, but what have you heard?
There's a couple of different theories to what happened. Drugs, that was one.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was he was involved with the mob and they reckon he was hit by them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe, because if you get hit by a mob, surely you're either stomped out or shot or chucked in the fucking canal, not drugged.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem very mob fucking mentality to plan it, you know, make it look like a mm-hmm. drug overdose. The biggest theory is his wife.
Yeah.
I don't know what to believe.
Are you swaying anyway?
It could have been suicide, you know, down to depression. I don't want to accuse his wife of anything, but that mm-hmm. anyone who's...
Well, I know you're obviously not accusing her of anything, but I mean, in terms of what you've heard and, you know, people's opinions that may have swayed you without looking into the case in depth yourself.
Yeah, because it was found in a hotel room, weren't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Found in a hotel room dead from a drug overdose. The only thing is...
Well, it wasn't a drug overdose.
I thought it was.
No.
What was it?
Well, you're going to find out.
Oh. One thing I can tell you about Getty, and I said it to you, I don't know if you've watched it yet, you probably haven't. The best fight from start to finish I have ever seen.
Mickey Ward.
Mickey Ward and Getty, the third fight,
mm-hmm.
is just unreal.
I did watch that movie about Mickey Ward.
Like, it's a bit different.
Is the fight, I can't actually remember, it was years ago, it was the fight in that movie, I assume. No.
No, because... So the Getty fight had been after that was set.
Oh, okay.
But like, if you saw Katie Taylor fight Amanda Serrano,
mm-hmm.
the way they were stood in the middle of the ring, swinging like fuck at each other in the last round.
Yeah.
That for 12 rounds or 15 rounds. Like, they was just knocking seven balls of shite out of each other.
Yeah.
Because they were both brawlers. They were both sluggers. And it was just insane. But yeah. Maybe his wife did it. I don't know. You tell me.
Take it away. So yeah, you're kind of, you don't really know. You've heard all these theories, but you're really not swayed.
No.
You've heard loads of rumors.
Yeah.
Arturo Thunder Getty was said to have produced thrilling fights and became known as one of the most entertaining boxers that the sport had ever seen. He began his professional career in the early 90s and worked his way to a record of 49 fights, 40 wins, 31 by knockout.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In 2007, after suffering numerous injuries, Arturo retired from boxing. And this was said to be something that he struggled to come to terms with and would lead to alcohol and drug abuse. Quote, "He partied like he fought, hard and heavy. I knew if he continued drinking, something bad was going to happen. It was inevitable. He would become aggressive, nasty. He was a completely different man when he was drinking." His marriage seemed to be rocky, with heavy amounts of verbal abuse and some incidents of physical abuse. On the 11th of July 2009, while on holiday in Brazil with his wife and 10-month-old son, Arturo was found dead in his hotel room. Arturo was just 37 years of age. His death was ruled a homicide, and his wife, Amanda, was charged with murder. But following an autopsy, the coroner determined his death to have been suicide by hanging. The charges against Amanda were dropped, and she was released after spending 3 weeks in custody.
That's where I got the drugs thing from then.
Oh, it's definitely a part of the story.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think Amanda had anything to do with his death. But I think a detail that makes people want to believe that this was murder is the fact that it was the strap of her handbag that was used to hang him.
But she wouldn't be strong enough, so she'd have to get someone in.
Like, I just no to the theory. Basically, in regards to, oh, his wife did it, there's people really, really pushing that narrative, I think. I know there's people really pushing that narrative. I'm just not really buying it.
But they do it the other way around, don't they? Like, if something were to happen to you, I'd get arrested.
I mean, yes, but that's more likely statistically. There's a big... The problem here, we've had this conversation before. There is a big, big, big problem in sports in general, but I think in particularly with boxing, where if a male boxer is having any sort of trouble, turmoil, or whatever, it's his wife. It's the woman who's gotten in the way. We've had this debate.
Yeah, we had an argument about Frank Bruno.
We did, yes. We did. You know, I was to do with Frank Bruno, I was going off reading about him and what he had said and his mental health troubles.
Yeah.
You were going off, you know, it was someone who knew him, but it was hearsay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So although it was the connection, so you felt like you could trust the information, you don't really know what your man's motive was. And again, a lot of, particularly men in sport, seem to really love to blame women.
Yeah, like, you've got to remember, I was a kid, and basically it was a previous trainer of Frank's,
mm-hmm.
and it was while he was training me, and I can't remember how the conversation came up. He was like, I think I'd said something about Frank Bruno being found, I think he got sectioned or something. He was in his garden. He had a boxing ring in his back garden,
mm-hmm.
and he was found just sat. Rocking in this ring.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely pissing it down with rain. And they basically said he's had just a full-on nervous breakdown. Just a full-on mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And his trainer said, yeah, it was his wife.
Yeah.
His wife. She mentally beat him down. And I was only a kid.
That was the version of events you got told. Whereas when I was looking into it, you know, Frank, he's very vocal about speaking about struggling with bipolar and also at the time, substance abuse.
Yeah.
Now, I have no idea of the relationship with his ex-wife. I can't comment on that. That could have been a contributing factor for all I know. But I think it's quite disgusting that someone would negate substance abuse or a mental health condition to blame the spouse. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. We see it quite often in boxing. Like, what was something that you were told? Women make your legs weak or something? What was it? Yeah, and it's like, so, yeah. Any shortcomings of yours can be put down to a woman. Like, fuck off.
It was basically meaning, you know, nutting.
Having sex.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. So it's just a term, women weaken.
Women are distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's one thing. I mean, I think it's kind of a load of bollocks, but it's one thing to say that. It's another to go, she must have killed him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It escalates. It escalates. So, like I said, it was the strap of Amanda's handbag that had been used. So people really ran with that and they kind of wanted it to be her, you know?
Did they say what type of handbag?
They did not. The thing is, though, Arturo had a history of substance abuse, and according to court documents filed in 2006, Arturo had attempted to overdose on cocaine, alcohol, and prescription drugs the year previous.
Cocaine.
Cocaine, if you're Neil.
It's not cocaine, it's cocaine.
It's cocaine.
Cocaine.
It's not cocaine.
It is cocaine.
Cocaine.
This is fucking cashew all over again.
I will never say cocaine. Seriously, anyway. A friend of Arturo's also spoke of how he had previously pleaded with him back in 2004. Arturo had asked him to use his gun in order to end his own life. Based on the information that is available to us, it's clear that Arturo was struggling with substance abuse, and most likely he used the drugs to self-medicate due to his mental health not being in the best shape.
So is that where they're getting it? But his mental health, because of his missus? Is that where they're going?
I mean, again, I don't want to diminish that. I mean, it does seem... I don't want to downplay troubles in their relationship. That's, you know... Their relationship seemed to have been volatile. I don't think it was a good situation for either of them to have been in.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean she killed him.
No.
You know? Another detail that caused quite a lot of bad blood between Amanda and the Gaddy family, his will.
Oh.
Mm, as soon as you had money in there,
yeah.
Done for. Now, the problem was...
Is this where she slips up and goes, all for nothing?
No, no.
Oh.
Not Amanda. Arturo had two wills. It's getting a bit complicated now. The first one dated back to 2007, which leaves everything to his mother, brother, and his daughter from a previous relationship. The second from 2009, which leaves everything to Amanda and their son. So, Amanda did stand to gain from Arturo's death, but the problem was, Amanda had a signed copy of the will. And the 2007 copy, which the family are claiming is his true will.
Yeah.
They didn't have a signed copy.
Oh.
So as it stands, Amanda has the true will and they're just trying to claim more.
Well, wouldn't it go by the latest one anyway?
Yes. That's how I would. I mean, you can update things and, you know, it seems to me that maybe he had wrote up a will previously and that's who he would have. But now moving on in his life.
Yeah.
But from the point of view of pushing the narrative that she was this kind of gold digger or whatever it was that they want people to believe about her, that's going to fit in nicely to their narrative of everything's left to her and the son.
Yeah.
It is slightly odd to me that his daughter wasn't included in the will. But look, I don't know what the reason is behind that.
Yeah.
Pat Lynch, Arturo's promoter, along with his family, seem convinced that Amanda was behind his death. With Pat even stating that the goal is to, quote, clear his name.
I think there is a documentary on Gatti's death.
There is. I'm nearly positive I watched it years ago. When I was looking at pictures, I was like, this is so familiar.
There's either a proper documentary or there's like a video on YouTube where someone's deep diving into it and it's like an hour long.
I just want to go back to Pat Lynch's comment, though. Quote, clear his name. What exactly does that mean? Is that you don't want the legacy that you helped create to be tarnished?
Right.
What do you, like, clear his name of what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not being accused of murdering someone else.
So is it a guilty conscience?
I think that's pure, because he's the promoter. I think this is like fucking typical promoter behavior. And like I said, the legacy I've helped create, I wanted to remain intact. When asked if he was trying to prove that Amanda was involved in Arturo's death, he said, quote, this is not a witch hunt against Amanda, okay? We have our suspicions about what happened. So he's being careful about what he says, but when asked if he viewed Amanda as a, you know, a black widow type, he answered, quote, yeah, I'd say so. Pat, come on. So, Pat Lynch, along with the family, they are again, like I said, convinced that Amanda is behind Arturo's death. So, they get into a bit of a private investigation into his death. Okay. They're not buying it.
Yeah.
So, from their private investigation, they concluded that there was blunt force trauma to the back of his head and that he had been manually strangled after falling unconscious. So that kind of what you said, she wouldn't be strong enough.
Yeah.
That's how they think she managed it. But the injury to the back of his head, There were witnesses who saw Arturo bleeding earlier that evening following him getting into a fight with someone who attempted to intervene after Arturo had become aggressive towards Amanda.
Right.
So let's rule that out.
Yeah.
They also argued about the position of the body. That is a fair enough point of how he had fallen. So how he had fallen, it doesn't line up.
With a hanging.
So yeah, basically they recreated this. They got a dummy weighing the same amount as his body and they dropped it and they said, you know, we did it 1,000 times and he never fell in the same spot.
Yeah.
Okay, so the problem with this theory is that the police already admitted that the crime scene photos were not accurate as they had taken the photos after evidence had already been moved. So they'd already like moved a table out the way to get to his body or what have you.
Right.
So it's just not accurate, you know? Now, here's a conversation of one of the private investigators talking about the case. So they're asked, quote, "Do you believe she had an accomplice?" They reply, "I think it's distinctly possible." He's asked, "Do you have any evidence?" To which he replies, "I have emails."
Oh.
Well, they then ask him of her in contact with someone planning murder. He says, "Oh no, I don't have anything like that." So they then ask him, "This is just your idea." And he replies, "It is a feeling I have, yes." A feeling you have? Really? Like, really?
Yeah, you gotta be...
What is this?
You gotta have a bit of evidence.
What are we doing here, lads? You know what I mean? I have to say, like, this whole thing pisses me off because, like, you know, like I said, Pat Lynch going, oh, you know, we don't want to, like, tarnish... Well, no, I'm saying that. He's saying clear his name, which I would assume is to mean don't want to tarnish his legacy. Mm-hmm. What the hell do you think you're doing right now?
Yeah.
You know, this is fucking outrageous to me. Now, there's also Arturo's older brother, Joe Gaddy. He's also a boxer. Have you heard of him? I don't think he was as popular or well-known.
I think I knew he were a boxer. Yeah.
So he said, quote, "My brother is me. We talk the same. We laugh. We joke the same. I just hate to say it, but it came to this, that people need to know the truth. He was on drugs. He was on painkillers and he was an alcoholic." When asked if he thinks his brother took his own life, he said, quote, "I believe it. I believe it. That night in Brazil, he found himself in a dark place." So his brother is, I think, a little bit more realistic about the troubles Arturo was going through.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not like clearly it was the wife.
Yeah.
So following the exhumation and a second autopsy at the request of his family, it was stated that there was no signs of foul play and his death was again ruled a suicide. That's the family's autopsy.
Okay.
Ruling basically in favour of Amanda.
Yeah.
Also, just to jump back to the whole issue to do with the wills and who got awarded what happened there, what went down.
Yeah.
Amanda did win the case and was awarded what was left of the estate after legal fees. So it was originally around 6 million. And because of all the back and forth, that dwindled down to 2 million.
But Amanda, fucking hell.
Yeah, but Amanda did win and received the remainder of his estate.
Yeah. And the family got sweet fuck all.
Basically, yeah. I think going back to what his promoter said, I think there seems to be a lot of ego here. I completely understand his family wanting answers and to have an absolute. But I find it strange just how involved his promoter is. I mean, of course, there is also a lot of money on the line as well, which makes people...
I said it in the last episode. Fucking promoters, they don't look out for the fighter.
The devil.
Yeah. Look at fucking Don King.
Not a great guy.
No.
Not the best.
Shite-org.
Absolute. As far as Arturo Gatti's legacy in boxing goes, on the 10th of December 2012, Arturo was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. So an incredible boxer and, you know, like was said earlier, you know, one of the most entertaining the sport had ever seen.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that it appears his mental health didn't seem as much of a priority to some of those who surrounded him. So that's the case of the death of Arturo Gatti.
Yeah, that's one I'd love to get feedback from listeners. What do they think?
You know, I mean, this is the thing. So obviously, like in this episode, we're doing a few different cases. So I've kind of compressed the information down, but we really could have done a full episode on that.
Easily.
Yeah. It was very interesting.
Yeah.
That's all I've got for you for deaths and boxing for now. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot. Had to kind of dwindle it down a bit. Yeah. But couldn't leave it just the one episode.
No.
Had to get a few more in there.
No, like we got it. Even after listening to you, what's gone through all the research, I don't know what happened to him.
I don't think Amanda had anything to do with his death. Yes, their relationship was not good, but that doesn't mean she killed the man.
Yeah.
He was known to have had issues with substance abuse, and clearly he was not in the best mental health.
Yeah, I agree. I think he took his own life.
Yeah. I mean, you got to also remember Amanda was, you know, they weren't together that long. She also had a 10-month-old child to care for, dealing with this. And then she's thrown in jail, being accused of this. The family were still after. She's never received, I mean, they still, I assume, think she did it. She's never received an apology or anything from the family.
Mm.
You know, it's still kind of, as far as I'm aware to this day, bad blood.
Yeah.
It's hard going for everyone involved. And like I said, I understand his family. They just want answers. They're, you know, sometimes when you're desperate, you just cling to what seems most logical to you or the easiest answer possibly. I can't speak for them, but.
And the promoter just adding fuel to the fire.
That's my opinion. I think he's kind of a bit of an instigator in this.
Yeah.
And I'm not overly keen on him. That man.
I knew that would come in.
Yeah. But you said it yourself, promoters.
Shitehawks.
Pricks.
Yeah, they're just evil.
Yeah.
Look at Eddie Hearn.
Ugh, I can't stand that guy. And then there's that new one now who's like a mini Eddie Hearn.
He's just trying to be Eddie Hearn.
Yeah, it pisses me off.
Yeah.
Like a mini me over there.
And then you got Frank Warren, who looks like a scrotum.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So, after dishing out some insults, oddity.
Oddity?
Yeah.
Boycott.
Boycotting what?
Charles Cunningham Boycott.
Oh.
So, Charles Cunningham Boycott was a British land agent in County Mayo. He worked under Lord Erne, the landowner. So, Charlie Boy was the enforcer, so to speak, for the landowner. He managed the land, overseen the work of the labourers and collected their rent.
Walking around with a whip?
Yeah, scumbag, basically.
Yeah.
In 1880, the Irish National Land League started a campaign as part of their fight to bring about land reform. Their set of demands was known as the three Fs. The three Fs included fair rent. They wanted rent control. If their rent was to change, they wanted to go through the courts, not to be decided on the whim of their landlords. Fixity of tenure, meaning they cannot just evict the tenant if they've paid their rent.
Yeah.
Again, fair, wouldn't you say? And the last being free sale.
Fuck off.
No, free sale.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, fair. No, free sale was the last one, and this was so they could sell a financial stake to another tenant without constant interference from the landowner.
Right.
Again, fair point well made.
Yes.
Members of the Irish National Land League encouraged the workers on the land to not only down tools, but to totally and completely alienate Charles from the community. Now this
get fucked then.
What do you mean get fucked?
Tell him to get fucked.
That's basically what they did, but in a very, very kind of like passive aggressive manner.
Yeah.
Now this also included businesses refusing to serve him or revoking their services. After this, Charles had a shit fit. While some of those who resisted were threatened into compliance with violence, Charles also decided to write a strongly worded letter to the Times to highlight how outrageously he was being treated by these peasants. Now, of course, the Brits sided with Charlie. You know, they're like, this is outrageous.
Yeah.
Can't treat this man like that. They viewed this as poor old Charlie. You know, he's just trying to do his job. Why are they giving him such a hard time?
Because he's giving them a hard time.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, Brits at it again. Now, not wanting to give in to the demands of these hardworking people who, you know, just wanted a few rights, they decided to bring in others who would harvest the crops for them. It's thought that this operation cost the British government about £10,000 for the harvest of roughly £500 worth of crops.
Fucking hell.
A bit of a fuck up, lads. Not great. So they made a right mess of it, and by the end of the year, Charles had left Ireland and fucked off back to England. He passed away on the 19th of June, 1897, at the age of 65. Now, as interesting as this story is, I'm not just telling you about this dickhead for the crack. The reason we're talking about this incident is because this is actually where the term to boycott comes from.
That's what I said at the beginning. I mean, yes. To boycott what?
No, that's that Charles boycott. We're boycotting boycott.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, the Irish, because they were sick of this fucking Brits bullshit,
yeah,
boycotted him and then just used his name to mock him and go, yeah, I fucking boycott you, you prick.
Are you only doing this because I said to you, I might start looking at where phrases came from?
No. I came across the story and I was like, oh shit, okay. That's an oddity right there. That's fucking deadly, isn't it?
Yeah.
I never knew. Boycott came from the Irish being like, ah, do you know what? Fuck you.
Get fucked.
Yeah. There you go. See, this is the thing. Only recently, the Irish got a few words into the dictionary. One of which was spice bag.
Yeah.
Which was fucking insane to me.
Yes.
I thought it was hilarious. So, you know, lads, don't just be giving us credit for the spice bag. You know, add boycott to the list. How's that grab you?
That is actually really interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't know where you were going with it. But
thought you thought I was just bashing the Brits for the crack.
Yes.
Yeah, to be fair, you know, it's not it's pretty on trend for me to do that.
Well, let's boycott this episode.
Oh. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.